Hello, and welcome to Spooky You, where our top story tonight, Scooby-Doo and Mystery Incorporated. Who made the decisions for that show, and why was it allowed to be aired on television?
You're still watching that?
I am not watching it. I am still trying to process what the hell was going on during that show's creation.
Dude, it's literally been like 5 months.
I don't care, because here's the thing. They literally opened a season with a villain who was a giant baby clown. Not even like killer clowns from outer space. Baby Talk, man baby, riding in a tricycle, tearing up the town. And they thought that was a good idea.
Oh, that's an absolute not. Absolute no.
On top of that, they had Daphne leave the band kind of trope. Oh yeah, she's not coming back. And they're like, yeah, we're going to make it a two-parter just so you really think at the end she doesn't come back the first episode. Like, yeah, no, we're serious about this.
The fuck? No.
And then she dates Taylor Lautner, which they didn't name him that, but it was very obvious that it was supposed to be Taylor Lautner.
What the
fuck? Who then ends up being the baby villain.
What in the 2008? No.
Exactly.
Listen.
No. It only got crazier from there because...
Go ahead.
Because here's the thing. They literally have a parrot commanding Nazi soldiers or Nazi robots. Yes, no. They're not actually put as Nazis, but they have the Sturmgewehr helmet that flares out at the bottom. They have the little patch on the side that instead of an actual Nazi symbol, they just have the circle and the cross through it, like the no. So they full well know. And then these Nazi robots gun down a teenager. Like, it happened off screen, but Scooby-Doo had Nazi robots gun down a teenager.
Well, all I have to say is that I appreciate you taking one for the team for all of us. And
they created a new timeline, which, by the way, yes, that actually happened in Scooby-Doo. There was a new timeline created and they're like, oh, yeah, look, she's fine. She's happy. I'm like, fuck no. We saw what you did, Scooby-Doo. You gunned down a freaking teenager. Velma was her best friend. And Velma just stands there for a moment and then is like, come on, we need to keep moving.
So is this now the Scooby-Doo cinematic universe?
I don't know what it was, but I continue to go down this rabbit hole because I just want to know what drug were all the creators and writers on when they were making this show.
They're like, you go down the fucking rabbit hole with this. Let's just say, hi, we are Spooky You. We love to talk all things legends, lore. Apparently Scooby-Doo is thrown in there too. I guess that kind of goes, that's pretty spooky. We love it. If it's weird, macabre, dark, just off the fucking wall, we love it. We want to talk about it and we want to share it with you guys. I am one of your hosts, Allie.
I am the other host, JP. Today, we are talking about something that is very near and dear to where I live. The Aurora Borealis.
The Northern Lights.
Or if you live in the Southern Hemisphere, the Aurora Australis.
Aurora Australis.
Yeah, they also happen in the Southern, because, you know, the Earth is a sphere.
Oh, so... Hold on. So what you're telling me is that the Earth is not flat.
Get the fuck off this podcast. How is that somehow stupider than my Scooby-Doo rant?
I always try to outdo you. I am the older sister. It's my job.
That's fair. Okay, so today we're talking about the Aurora Borealis and some of the history and mythology that has been created around it from different cultures. Obviously today, with our fancy science and technology, we actually know what's going on with it. So quick
science
description.
Okay, but do we? Because some of us just realize the Earth is not flat, so.
Yes, Allie. We know how it works. So the Aurora Borealis is actually caused by charged particles that are released from anomalies on the sun, often called solar wind. These charged particles travel the 93 million miles from the sun to Earth's atmosphere. When these particles come into contact with atoms in the atmosphere, they excite the electrons in the atoms. And if you remember this from chemistry, when this energy hits an electron on those atoms, it excites it up to the next energy level. The electron bounces up there at the next energy level for a bit, but doesn't like to stay up there. And then it drops an energy level and releases a photon or light.
Surprisingly, I do remember that from chemistry class in 2007.
You know, it's very weird too, because when you're talking about energy levels, you always think of nature as this very gradual, anything can happen. But it's like the one time where nature is very specific. Like, there needs to be a very particular amount of energy that goes into an electron to get it up. But think of a neon light and the gas inside a tube when there's electricity run through it. Now, depending on what atoms they hit, such as nitrogen, oxygen, the atmosphere, it creates varying lights. The most common scene are this dazzling green, pink, purplish light. And then on rare occasions, you can also see red, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
Yeah, in my mind, I picture the green. Like, I feel like that's kind of, when you think northern lights, your mind immediately goes to green. At least that's me with my limited knowledge.
One thing I should also note, too, is that there tends to be a little bit of disingenuous photography when it comes to northern lights. A lot of times, people will photograph them, and you'll see these brilliant, bright green lights. And that's not to say that that doesn't happen. I personally have actually seen that kind of bright greenness when we had the northern lights here in Sitka. But actually, most of the time, they're this duller grayish. And it's really cool. I'll post up some photos on our Instagram page from whenever we had the northern lights come through, because that is truly, whether or not you get that bright green with it, it is a sight to behold. It is ominous. It's beautiful, eerie, anything you can imagine. It's just spectacular. Literally the whole town was outside freezing every part of our body off, but we did not care. I think my friends and I, we actually jumped into our car and started driving around with no regard to how warm we were dressing ourselves. Just, there's northern lights, we gotta go.
Which is like not a smart thing to do in Alaska, by the way.
Well, we live in Southeast Alaska. We're basically just North Washington State.
Oh, okay. That makes it so much better.
I'm not up in Fairbanks area. I'm down closer to Vancouver, Washington area. But most of the time, yeah, it is even a little bit less common to see them at Sitka's level. But it's even rarer for it to come all the way down to like New York State and Mediterranean. But it has been known to happen.
I think our parents said they may have seen them when they lived in upstate New York.
I believe they did, yes. And for those of you up in the New York State area, you know, keep your eyes on the sky and check your NOAA apps.
I mean, keep your eyes on the sky in general, because you can see UFOs and shit, like, and, you know, aliens. Aliens.
The last thing I'm going to do is cover where the term Aurora Borealis came from. It was first coined in 1619 by Galileo, coming from Aurora, the Roman goddess of dawn, and Boris, the Greek god of the north wind.
The Roman goddess of dawn, like the break of day.
Yes.
Okay, for some reason in my mind for about 2 seconds, whenever you said the Roman goddess of dawn, I thought like the name Dawn, like D-O-N. And then as I asked the question in my mind, I was like, oh, wait, there's Dawn, the break of day.
Anyway, let's get on to the myths.
All right, let's dive into the myths, baby. Let's go.
Our first one is going to be with the Norse, because I quite frankly can't think of a single Viking movie, TV show, or video game where the Northern Lights aren't prominently displayed at some point in the show.
Were they in Frozen?
Yeah, probably.
They had to be, yeah.
Someone add us if you saw Northern Lights in Frozen, because I would be surprised if they did not add that.
I kind of low-key need to look it up right now, so tell the mythology. I'm going to see if we were right.
So, according to the research I was able to do, there's a number of myths depending on what culture you have up in the Scandinavian countries. For Norse, or what we would think of as the Vikings, the two main ones that I was able to look up were the idea that the Northern Lights were a reflection of the Valkyries' armor, the winged women warriors of Odin, or that it was quite literally the Bifrost, or as we know it from Marvel, Bifrost, the rainbow bridge connecting Midgard to Asgard.
Nice.
However, we don't actually have any evidence that either of these were believed by the Norse.
Really?
Yeah, so it's kind of a very interesting thing because most likely these myths were actually not originally mythology with the Norse, but folklore from that area, more likely after the Scandinavian countries were Christianized and joined more of their European culture, and that old Norse lifestyle of sailing and trading became further and further into history. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, think of how Marvel portrays Thor and Odin.
Okay, you know how many Marvel movies I've seen.
You have literally seen Thor, Allie.
I have? I have. Yes, I have.
You know who Chris Hemsworth is.
Well, no shit, I know who Chris Hemsworth is. He's freaking gorgeous. Like, he's hot, man.
Yes, I've actually seen him in person.
Oh, fuck you.
Yeah, I know. But anyway.
Wait, where?
At the Indy 500.
What the hell was he doing at the Indy 500?
Not relevant to this podcast.
Touche.
So the reason, think of it like with how Marvel portrays Asgard, Odin, Thor, Loki. That's our culture portraying another culture in the past, which is more likely what these myths came from, rather than actually being a part of that culture.
Interesting.
There is one Finnish one, though, I did want to add, and that was the myth of the Revonlutet. I probably butchered that, but hey, what else is new? It is the idea of foxfires. Basically, the tale goes that Arctic foxes were running across the sky, scraping their tails across the mountains, creating sparks. And aww, those sparks were the Northern Lights.
Oh, I love that.
Other versions say that the lights came from their tails hitting snowflakes, which I kind of like a little bit more because then they're going all over the place and they happen during winter when, you know, it's cold, dark, and long. So I kind of like that one a little bit more.
Yeah, I like that. That's fun.
Yeah, so those are weirdly a couple from Scandinavia, which actually aren't from Scandinavia. So we're off to a great start.
Like, kind of is, but isn't. Also, I did look up if Northern Lights were in Frozen, and I don't think they were in the movies.
Not Frozen 2, whenever she was running all the way up north.
I feel like I need to go back and watch it, which you don't have to tell me to go back and watch a Disney movie. Like, I will gladly do it. But so more to come on that. But okay, tell me some more myths.
All right. So moving from Europe and Scandinavia, we go across the pond to North America and talk about some of the beliefs from native cultures.
Oh.
Now, obviously, there's a lot and I don't have time to get into all of them. So I'm going to hit a couple that I thought were really cool. First, starting right here in Sitka, we have the beliefs of the Tlingit tribe. Oh. Now, hopefully I'm getting these right because I don't want to misrepresent them. A lot of them, I know a few from the tribe and they're really cool people. And one was basically the idea that the lights were dancing human spirits.
Oh, I love that. Really
other tribes from a similar latitude, the Saulteaus of eastern Canada and Eskimos of the lower Yukon River, also held similar beliefs varying between humans and spirits of animals or animals that they hunted.
That's really beautiful. So when they say dancing spirits, dancing humans, dancing animals, do the lights actually look like they're dancing?
Oh, yeah. No, they are flickering. They are very active. They flick, whip, think of, you know, whenever you see twirlers or performers when they have those ribbons and it almost yes. looks like as they whip it around, the ribbon stays in place and then you see the end of it flick yeah. all around. It's very much like watching those, except
okay,
larger, gotcha. More beautiful, and in the sky.
I gotcha. Wow. Okay. Because I don't even have anything to add on. Okay, I'm just glad you confirmed that. Thanks for confirming that they, in fact, do flick and move. And
I saw what looked like a raven in the light. So, yeah, they can do a lot of things.
Oh, that's so cool. Okay. So it's like when you spot clouds and you're like, oh, that one looks like a puppy. That one looks like a cannonball. I don't know. That one looks like a paintbrush.
Not exactly. Most of the time they look like ribbons in the sky. It was just this one section where we were up by Stargavin, where it almost looked more in a ball or in a circle that things were happening.
Oh.
And this one, it had two, it looked like these giant wings were coming out and there was a center. So it vaguely resembled a bird. And because ravens and eagles are huge around here, literally and population wise, I was like, oh my gosh, there's like a Northern Lights raven.
There's a bird in the sky.
Yes, and not just the raven stealing my trash.
All right, keep going. Tell me more about Native American myths with the Northern Lights.
So one of the cool ones I love is as we go a little further south, we get to some of the lower 48s, the Maka of Washington State, the Menominee of Wisconsin, and the Mandan in what is now North Dakota. And it's very interesting because some of these Native American cultures actually were a little bit not fearful, but they definitely did not look at the Northern Lights with the same beauty and awe that cultures further north did. And they actually rather saw them more as these giant fires in the sky, large creatures farther north cooking things, or even large creatures holding giant torches. So
fires?
Yes.
Why?
I'm glad you asked, because the Northern Lights actually happen at different altitudes depending kind of on the colors and what's involved, because you have to remember that the colors depend on what chemical the charged particles are interacting with. And the higher you go, they start interacting with a little bit more oxygen, which produces red light. And these happen at very high altitudes. And if you remember, the Northern Lights tend to happen at high latitudes. And because the Earth is curved, sometimes the lower you go, you can't necessarily see the lower altitude green and purples, and all you end up seeing is the higher altitude red.
Okay, I'm looking up a picture.
I should note that the red Northern Lights are a thing, and they don't happen as much. It needs a really strong storm in order to see them, but if you're lower altitude, you're likely to see these red Northern Lights, and they look very ominous.
Yeah, I just looked up a picture. Okay, the whole like something cooking something far away or fires in the sky. Yeah, okay, I completely understand why they thought that. Absolutely. I would think that too if I saw it.
Yeah, and honestly, it's really cool because I love this. It's science affecting culture because it's quite literally just a matter of latitude where these tribes are on a map and where these colors just happen to be because of where certain atoms are, that it totally affects how cultures interpret the lights. I think that's just absolutely fantastic. And I love it.
It's where science and mythology meet.
It is sick.
It's awesome.
Moving on from a few Native ideas, there's tons more, but we don't have time to get into it. And we're going across another ocean to Japan.
Ooh, nice. Okay. But aren't they a little far south?
Well, one of the most famous Northern Lights is the idea that children who are conceived under the Northern Lights will be graced with high intelligence and beauty beyond measure, basically just be sexy AF.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains. I was probably conceived under the Northern Lights then. So yeah, that totally tracks. Okay.
Uh-huh. That's just like how we keep telling you you're special. You are special, Allie.
Well, okay. That's all right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, as you had mentioned earlier, it is a little weird, though, that there is a Northern Lights myth associated with Japan because it's not really much in that area where they'd be able to see the Northern Lights. And even when you think about it, the parts of Japan that would be able to see the Northern Lights are towards the north. And because of its history, there may not have been as much sharing of culture throughout Japan. And likely anything associated with the Northern Lights would have been very regional.
Interesting. Okay.
So why is there this idea that everyone has that all of Japan had a belief about the Northern Lights? Well, weirdly enough, you actually have 1980s Alaskan tourism to thank for this myth.
Yay, capitalism.
It turns out that, according to researcher Stein Matheson of the University of Troisdomo, The myth likely started in Alaska in the 1980s when managers of hot springs up north were misquoted in saying why Japanese honeymooners love to come to the area. And they had this idea that, oh, it's because they think that if they conceive a child under northern lights, then, you know, they'll be graced with all of this
beauty, intelligence. Yes, everything I possess. Correct. Keep going.
Well, that wasn't necessarily entirely accurate. It was misquoted. And it stuck, though. And people continued to perpetuate that myth. And it even made its way onto a few television shows. And eventually made it onto Alaskan tourism ads and brochures that were advertised to Japan. And it was kind of one of those things where if you don't really know any better, I mean, this isn't to say like, oh, people in Japan were blind to ideas and concepts of their culture. It's just, you don't know everything. So if someone's just like, oh yes, this is a part in something we believe in, you're like, huh, well, I've never heard that before, but okay, fair enough. I'm not going to go take time out of my day.
Like, who am I to judge kind of thing, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to take the time out of my day to go and try and validate what this thing is saying. And we know this for a fact because, I mean, let's be real, we've all know how the internet works.
Yes. And the internet was not really a thing back then, so.
This became, it just slowly creeped in. It kind of became like a common knowledge thing to the point where pretty much every tourism site I saw perpetuated this myth. And to be honest, it's just, there's no actual historical roots for it. So it's kind of funny how one of those things that we, once again, created a myth that we think is old, but is very new.
I kind of do love that, though, that like Alaskan tourism was just like accidentally making up a myth and accidentally creating mythology. And it kind of makes me wonder if that's how mythology just is. Like, people are just like, oh, I'm just going to make stuff up, but well, make it cool.
That's how folk tales work. And then people, they sort of blend together to the point where that's just, oh, how people think. For example, one of the most famous and mind-numbingly frustrating ones is the Viking with the horns helmet. Vikings never actually wore horns on their helmet, but because that's a popular scene at the opera, because for whatever reason, when we think of the opera, we think of a woman with horns on her helmet and a metal bra singing extremely beautiful. And somehow that just...
You're like, I had to throw that in there.
Yeah. I mean, I have no other better... I have no better way
to... We do know an opera singer, so you can't... Yeah, you gotta be nice.
I'm not trashing opera. I'm just saying the point is that that's a thing. And because of that, everyone thinks Vikings wear horns when they don't. And then don't even get me started on any Mel Gibson film.
I don't think I've even seen a Mel Gibson film, so we don't...
Oh, Jesus Christ. The Patriot and Braveheart, they are...
Yeah, I've never seen them.
Oh, they are just mind-numbingly bad historical films. Oh my goodness. I have seen armchair historians on YouTube go on for hour-long rants trashing these movies.
Oh God. Well, if an armchair historian is trashing the movie, then you know it's bad.
Well, just universally, they're objectively bad. No, we'll save that for another time. God, there's going to be one episode that just comes out. It's going to be me ranting about Scooby-Doo and Mel Gibson.
We're just going to catch you one day where it's just not going to be a good day for you. And then you're just going to come off and it's going to be a solid 7-minute rant just about how shitty Scooby-Doo and Mel Gibson are. And yeah, somehow it's going to tie together and tie back into the episode. So for that day, boys and girls, ladies and gents, babies and babies, just wait because that day is coming.
Okay, well, in the meantime, let's go to our last one. And this actually comes from Australia. And this last one's pretty straightforward. And it's basically the idea that either the northern lights were seen, or in their case, the southern lights, were seen either as the gods dancing across the skies, which tracks, or if it was kind of more red and reminded of brush fires, they would kind of think fires in the sky, distant fires, which honestly made things kind of bad because, you know, if you think the sky's on fire or you think that's a very big fire, that's already just bad enough.
Yeah, no, that's already really... So like one was like, oh, yay, beautiful, glorious. The other one was like, oh, no.
generally, red is not seen as a calming color for a lot of people.
No, red is not a calming color. Like, don't paint your bedroom red and expect things to be okay.
Also, just the fact that most things in nature that you would be afraid of, like fire, are red. So seeing that color.
Ladybugs.
Huh?
Ladybugs are red.
Are you afraid of ladybugs?
You said most things in nature are red.
That are bad, you should be afraid of.
That was the first thing that came to mind was ladybugs.
Okay. Wow. Anywho, those are some myths about the Northern Lights. If you're very curious, I encourage you to continue looking up and research some of these other cultures and how people believed in the Northern Lights. Don't use travel sites as your sources. They're not very good.
No, they make up their own myths, apparently.
And if you're very curious about if you can see the Northern Lights, you can go on to either, I think it's Northern Lights Tracker or NOAA's website, and they do actively track Northern Lights storms, so you can get predictions, times, and intensities of upcoming events.
And if you want to travel to see the Northern Lights, please get vaccinated and wear your mask and be safe. And if you want to learn more stuff, follow us on Instagram and talk to us, comment. We are at Spooky You Podcast. So just go find us, follow us, like us, talk to us. Tell us what you want to see or what you don't want to see or hear, I guess, because you can't see us because, you know, this is a podcast. So yeah, go follow us on Instagram.
Class dismissed.